right, y'all. Welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys, introducing James Bradley. He wrote the movie and the book Flags of Our Fathers, and I guess the sequel was just called Iwo Jima. Wrote the book Imperial Cruise and also Fly Boys, and his latest is called The China Mirage, The Hidden History of American Disaster in Asia. Welcome back to the show, James. How are you doing?
Hey, Scott. Thank you for having me again.
Good to talk to you. It's been a little while. And you know what? I am so busy fighting the last war in the Middle East all the time. I am way behind on our problems with China, but I gather we've got loads of them and that you would disagree about many of them being necessary conflicts. I have this great press release sent out by the Institute for Public Accuracy talking about the danger of even real war with China and an unnecessary war, in your opinion. So what do you think about what's going on here recently?
Well, I've been watching the news, and the Chinese Navy is not in San Francisco Bay, and they're not in the Caribbean, and they haven't built a base in Canada or Mexico, and it's a mirage and ridiculous to think they would. So what is the problem with China?
Yeah, what is the problem with China?
Well, I'd like to ask, what's the big problem? Ray McGovern, ex-CIA briefer to Ronald Reagan, his name is Ray McGovern, he's at raymcgovern.com, ex-CIA briefer to Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, just told me in an interview that the pivot to Asia that President Obama announced in Australia in 2011 was all about Raytheon and Lockheed popping champagne bubbles, bottles, because war in the Middle East, we've destroyed almost every building there, and chasing terrorists down alleys, it's not high profit. Whereas China, biggest country in the world population-wise, there's generations of business to be done there. So that the preparation for war is the key. And then the American media is, hyping that China is some danger. But, I've been living on and off in Asia since 1974. And again, I'm looking for this danger to be defined.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head there when you talk about business and all the business to be done building up a Cold War against China. But of course, when most people think of China in business, they don't think of militarism at all. They think about all the trade back and forth between China, all the American investment in China, and all the cheap plastic crap we get from them. And not only that, but other quality goods as well. And so it would seem like war, or even the threat of war, a Cold War with China, like we have, beginning right now, or really beginning back in Obama years, but continuing now, that would be a huge detriment to American big business if you're not Lockheed or Raytheon. What about everybody else? All the auto manufacturers, all the blue jeans, and all the soda pop, and all the whatever, equipment that people use to run their businesses, and all the other trade back and forth.
Well, again, I'm quoting another expert here, a guy by the name of Michael Clare, Klare, if people want to look up his many articles. He's he's deep into Washington and is consulted by the Pentagon. And he says that that we are decoupling from China. And if any of your listeners are ever looked at 1920s or 1930s maps of the various trading entities, Indochina was French, so it was this color. And then you use the French franc within these three countries, Cambodia, Laos, And then over here was the British Empire and Malaysia and Singapore, and then you use the British pound. So he says we're going back to less world trade, less of a large economy. It's going to be smaller and more trading blocks. Like I'm in New Zealand. New Zealand's working with Australia to form a healthy bubble from the virus, and they're cutting off all tourists, and then they're just going to intermingle among themselves. That won't go on forever. But the idea is smaller trade and trade within these, decoupled blocks.
Yeah, I mean, the virus really has changed everything as far as the entire globalist project goes, for better and for worse. But, a lot of what you say there reminds me of Jim Powell's book about World War One, where the whole first, I guess, introduction or chapter one to the thing or something is about the different trade blocs that became the Central Powers and Allied Powers alliances in war. And that, there were these multinational trade blocs, not entirely, they weren't entirely seeking autarky, but they weren't seeking global free trade either. They just had them within these two kind of minor alliances that grew into war alliances,
Yeah, that's one of the recurring things in history. Another recurring thing specifically between America and China, and the reason I named my last book The China Mirage, is there's been since George Washington's time all the way up to ours, this recurring thing where we don't like China, don't pay attention to China, and then China comes into focus, and the key is that China's going to become more like us. And in the 1930s, this was typified by Franklin Roosevelt, Pearl Buck, the number one author of the 1930s, Henry Luce of Time magazine. I document it all in my book. And we loved China because China was going to be like us. They were going to have white Christian churches on hilltops, and they had a Christian leader in Chiang Kai-shek, and he posed for pictures, holding the Bible. And we supported this dictator because, China wanted to be just like us. Once he took control of all of China, then it's going to be Christianized, and our missionaries are going to be happy. And God, do you know, after Pearl Harbor, they did a poll: who's the number one most popular ally in the world? And it wasn't Winston Churchill. It was Chiang Kai-shek in China. Because China wanted to be just like us. Pearl Buck told us this. Franklin Roosevelt told us China is the best example of American democracy in the world. This is when it was being run by a dictator. Then the second that Mao came to power in 1949, the Chinese people wanted Mao over Chiang Kai-shek. There was a civil war. They fought it out. Oh my God, China didn't want to be like America. So we cut relations. I don't know if you know, but we fired everyone who knew Chinese in the State Department. We fired anybody who knew Mao Zedong and cut off relations for a couple decades. Now then, oh, globalization. China, what we're going to do back in the Bush and the Obama administrations is the same thing that FDR and Henry Luce and Pearl Buck were doing. We're going to work with China. See, we're Americans, and then we're so democratic and we're just extraordinary people. And then we'll go over, with these Chinese who we view as a third world nation rising. And then they'll liberalize. The more they work with us, the more they'll liberalize, the more, in other words, be like us. They're going to want to eat apple pie. They'll probably give up their chopsticks, and they'll have potluck suppers across the country. Now, if you look at the American media, which I don't much, but I study, what they're saying about China. You see this on the liberal spectrum, the conservative spectrum, the up and down, left and right. All Americans agree now. Gee, we got screwed. We worked with China so well over the past 20 years, and they didn't liberalize, and they're still Chinese, And it's the same China mirage that China is going to change. Oh, look at New York Times front page article today. Look what China's doing in Hong Kong. They are restricting democratic rights. We got to get involved in this. China should be more like a, I mean, when are we going to give it up? China's the largest thing in the world. It's one fourth of the world. And I'm not arguing for China's policies. I'm just saying, hey, for a few thousand years, they've had this system. It's the same system. It's the emperor's system. Right now, the emperor is a committee, but it's the same system. They are Chinese. There's 1.4 billion, and they're not bombing America. They are no threat to America.
Well,
And
and
what
here's
we're
the thing too. I mean, over when you talk about Americanizing them and all of that kind of thing, I mean, they did abandon communism for fascism, which is still a totalitarian system, but at least they have prices. So now instead of laying down dying by the tens of millions, to get rich is glorious. And they have improved the standard of living, created a massive middle class, and even, like a pretty well-to-do working class, all things considered over there. As Lou Rockwell once wrote an article called From Death Camp to Civilization about how the Maoists had just raised the entire society all the way down to the ground and it just had to be started all over again, kind of. And so when people demonize China now, they ought to take into account this is probably, because of the artificial constrictions against them, this is probably the greatest rags to riches story in the history of the world. And then on top of that, I'll also add, well, you can say whatever you want about that, but also it seems to me like maybe if America wasn't soaking in the blood of a million dead Iraqis and we hadn't blown the entire 21st century being the most bankrupt and destructive, blood-soaked hypocrites going around talking about freedom when we obviously have no idea as a society what that's supposed to mean or, have absolutely zero commitment whatsoever to living up to it. Then maybe the Chinese and everybody else in the world would have taken the American brand of liberty a little bit more seriously. But instead, it's not liberty we're exporting, it's democracy. And that means whatever the Republicans say or something, which why would anyone take that seriously? And then surprise, they don't.
Well, it's the greatest rags to riches story, and the Pew Research Foundation, an American polling organization, polls and tells us that like 80% of the Chinese, but this is before COVID, 80% of the Chinese are happy with their leadership. And why wouldn't they be? The leadership of China has put like 50 million people a year into breaking into the middle class. I mean, I saw it. It's just an economic success story. Yes, China has a lot of problems. Yes, I'm not saying, I agree with all their policies. My point is, we have bridges to build in America. I mean, I was living in New York about 3 years ago, and I don't know how many tires I had to replace just driving to JFK Airport from Connecticut, potholes. We can take care of our own country, and let's do that. But why are we, pushing way across the Pacific to dink around with China? We're not going to have a fight with China if we just withdrew a bit. We don't need our military out there. We need to work on some world problems, and we're not going to change China, is my message.
Yeah.
Am I agreeing with China? Am I arguing for China? No. What I'm saying is, China's China, United States is United States, Mexico, let's invade Mexico and try to change them.
All right.
But
Well,
so.
so now do you discount the accusation that they have this more aggressive foreign policy now, as signaled by their rising navy and their colonization of all those little atolls in the South China Sea and all that stuff?
Well, those are a lot of words, and there's a lot of information out there about it. The way I look at it behind the scenes is the emperor looks at the maps and says, hey, this lane from Singapore, when the oil comes out of the Middle East and it turns the corner down there on the bottom of Singapore, and then it sails up the Malaysian coast past Vietnam in between Taiwan and brings oil to the emperor's people, that's a lane that has to stay open. I mean, you have Highway 95 in the United States on the East Coast of America. You have to keep it open for national security. So everything else is a detail, and the emperor's ready to wait a few hundred years to, consolidate that highway. But the emperor would say, hey, we're not in the Caribbean. Nobody is stopping your movement around San Francisco, San Diego. So get off our backs.
Yeah. Hey guys, just real quick, if you listen to the interviews only feed at the Institute or at scotthorton.org, I just want to make sure you know that I do a Q&A show from time to time at scotthorton.org/show, the old whole show feed. And so if you like that kind of thing, check that out there. Hey guys, here's how to support this show. You can donate in various amounts at scotthorton.org/donate. We've got some great kickbacks for you there. Shop Amazon.com by way of my link at scotthorton.org. Leave a good review for the show at iTunes and Stitcher. Tell a friend, I don't know. Oh yeah, and buy my books, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and The Great Ron Paul, The Scott Horton Show Interviews 2004 through 2019. And thanks. Hey guys, check out Listen and Think audiobooks. They're at listenandthink.com and of course on audible.com. And they feature my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, as well as brand new out, Inside Syria, by our friend Reese Ehrlich, and a lot of other great books, mostly by libertarians there. Reese might be one exception, but essentially they're all libertarian audiobooks. And here's how you can get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks. Just donate $100 to The Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate. It seems like part of the problem might also be just kind of a matter of projection by the Americans against the Chinese, that as our empire is falling apart and is being forced to retrench, at least in some ways, that, well, obviously they're going to try to fill the vacuum and be the global hegemon in our place. And yet, I wonder if you think that that's true. I mean, they do have, as you said, a very long tradition of just being China and not intervening around the world at all. But then again, it's been 100 years of chaos over there, so who knows what they want to do now? I don't know.
Well, no, we have history. What, you know, what the emperor wants to do. The emperor in the, was it the 11th or 12th century, sent this eunuch admiral out. He had the largest fleet of ships that were ever out on the sea. It was only equaled until World War II, if you can imagine. They had like 700 doctors in the fleet. And they built this huge fleet of ships, and they went all over the world, Australia, South Africa, Indonesia, and they brought back, you know, the artifacts and food from all over the world. And the mandarins and the emperor said, "What is this? There's all we, you know, out in the world, there's only barbarians and bad food." And they burnt all the ships, and they said, "We're not going out to the rest of the world." You know, China could have been conquering countries for thousands of years, and they weren't interested in it. It's more of an inward-looking country. You know, the capital's in Beijing, in the middle of the country. This is a land country. This is not a project power outside and invade other countries' country. I'm not saying, you know, they're such wonderful people and I'm naive. No, I'm just looking at history. Who invaded China in World War II? The Japanese. The Chinese didn't invade others. The South China Sea. Okay, let's worry about the South China Sea. Let's look at the last, I'm 66 in my lifetime. Let's count up the deaths from China in the South China Sea. I don't know, if are there any, let's see, Americans. John McCain was flying off aircraft carriers in the South China Sea. I interviewed hundreds of Vietnamese who were bombed from South China Sea ships. 3 million people died because of the American presence in the South China Sea. So I don't see this argument that the world's going to fall apart if the emperor keeps open the South China Sea as his lane.
Mm-hmm. All right, but the big one is Taiwan. How many million people live in Taiwan now?
My daughter lives there in the downtown Taipei. I go to Taipei an awful lot. That is a big one. And short term, it's just an argument, you know? And long term, it's part of China. I mean, if you look at back long term, I document this in the Imperial Cruise and also the China Mirage. You can see that, yes, Taiwan was under Chinese influence, and it was an American general who got the Japanese to invade, I think it was in 1878. And start to poke around Taiwan. So historically it was Chinese, and someday it will be Chinese, and it'll probably be, you know, folded in peacefully. But the emperor's got a few centuries to wait.
Now, so you don't think it's an emergency that the Chinese might attack and try to take over Taiwan sometime soon?
Well, who knows? But they didn't do it yesterday, and but that, see, that's their waters. It's like, to the American public, I'd just say, okay, put an enormous Chinese presence in Bermuda or in the Bahamas, and China's selling the Bahamas, aggressive weaponry that could hit Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Well, something
So
I've
now
noticed about.
I'm not talking right or wrong. I'm just saying, I don't think, I'd question, why are Americans debating what China's doing? And what about I mean, what's going on here? Debate about San Diego. I mean, debate about Miami or something. I'm from Wisconsin. And if you had taken, let's say, some people from New Orleans who really ran New Orleans well, and brought them up to Wisconsin and tried to run Wisconsin like they ran New Orleans, we'd go absolutely nuts. They can't understand Wisconsin. They don't know our traditions. It's just that can't be done. But we think we can take the American military and send them someplace and have a good outcome where they don't even speak the language. So I just ask America to pull back. I mean, I just interviewed David Vine, who wrote Base Nation. And he said, James, if you cut the American military budget by half, we're still the largest military by far.
Right. Yeah,
And
no
I'm
question about it.
interviewing Ray McGovern, who says we have to have China as an enemy because that's the only reason you can squeeze the American taxpayer for 50% of his taxes is to have a huge enemy. And Russia got boring and the Middle East isn't profitable enough.
Yeah. Well, it does seem like the Air Force and the Army prefer picking on Russia, and the Navy and the Marine Corps prefer picking on China, which is sort of all you need to know, right? Like, this is just parochial interests of, corrupt, self-interested bureaucracies here doing what they do. But here's the thing I want to ask you about. I notice this all the time in regards to Russia and China and all the war plans. They have the air sea battle plan and all of this stuff. And they have their various theories for fighting with the Russians as well. And I just hear this all the time. Discussions in D.C. and among military people and think tankers and what have you about fighting Russia and or China with conventional weapons. And it's discussed in a way where, the best I can tell, the phenomenon works like this. It goes without saying that they got nukes. Everybody knows they got nukes. They got H-bombs. They could destroy all our biggest cities in one day. And we all know that. And everybody knows that. It's not in dispute. It's not controversial or in discussion. But so, because it goes without saying, it literally goes unsaid. And then for time after time after time, they talk about, hey, it could really be a lot of fun fighting a big naval battle against, a big naval war against China. And this could be, all we ever dreamed of in the excitement as naval warriors, this kind of thing. And just ignoring the fact that if we ever do really have a fight with China, that it's almost certain that we'll lose San Francisco and LA and possibly Denver and New York and DC and Houston and every, major city in America. And they only need hundreds, and that's how many they have. But I just wonder, I mean, do you notice that? There really is more talk all the time about, this air-sea battle strategy and this kind of thing, where we could really get into a war if you listen to these guys.
Well, let's talk about listening to these guys. I mean, America has said we're going to have, I mean, we have a war college. It's called the War College. We have West Point. I think that what's the official name of West Point? The United States Military Academy. And we've got the Air Force Academy. We have the Naval Academy. So what are they studying? Gardening or, surfing or, hydroponics. They're studying war. So yeah, there's a lot of war plans when you've got colleges turning out really bright people whose job it is to have war plans.
Well, and I was still a kid during the Cold War. I remember it, pretty well. But even at the height of the brinksmanship in the early 80s, the idea was that, yeah, but we're not really going to fight them because we can't, and everybody knows that. And Ronald Reagan don't want to fight them any more than they want to fight us, and so kind of don't worry about it. But things seem actually worse now than then. It seemed like it was a more stable kind of a situation with the Soviet bloc there, the way it was and all that, and where the Americans, even the Reaganites, seem to be a lot more rational than the people who represent the centrist foreign policy consensus now.
Well, I don't know what exactly what to say about that. Trump doesn't want war. That's kind of obvious. If you look, you know, globally. But the president is not in control of the entire situation. And let's say there was a mistake. See, this is what the real geniuses, and I'm not in that category, but John Pilger, the Australian journalist who did the great documentary that's online called The Coming War with China, I'm in it. And Michael Clare, who I mentioned in this interview earlier, mm-hmm. what they're concerned about are accidents, not, you know, President Xi wanting to go to war, or President Trump wanting to go to war. But, oh my God, something happened and there's 70,000 dead Chinese and the something came from Okinawa. What could the president of China do, even if he doesn't want to fight? You know what I mean? Oh, 4,000 Americans are dead in a sunken aircraft carrier. Could Trump prevent war? Could any president stop war at that point?
Right.
What they're concerned about is an accident. And I brought up John Pilger and his documentary, The Coming War with China. In there, he interviews a guy who got the order on Okinawa to nuke China and Russia. Mm. So it was in the 60s. It's a true story, and he documents it. So these accidents have happened.
And oh, you're saying this guy got an order that was a mistaken order that he refused to carry out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a famous story, and it's documented in Pilger's. I mean, it's documented many places, but he brings it out and actually interviews the people. So, you know, accidents happen. We're humans. And that's what these big thinkers are really concerned about, is that there's just so much movement and tension and tit for tat going on right now between China and America, that an accident could happen. Accident inflames public opinion. And then we're not talking about the decisions of presidents in Beijing or Washington. We're talking about forced hands.
Yep. And when you talk about those different war plans, I mean, oftentimes it seems like, you know, the blue binder on the shelf there essentially is written in stone. And so if the war plan says in the event of X, you do that, then they just do that. And it seems like, you know, so many governmental type things. Thinking goes off and the previously provided structure kind of takes over. You know, back when, as Ellsberg talks about in his book, The Doomsday Machine, when he took over nuclear war planning in the Kennedy administration, the plan was that if war had broken out over Berlin, that they were to nuke every city in the Soviet Union and China, you know, and just kill however many hundreds of millions of people, even on the very first day, and that there were no other plans. That if, in other words, if the Soviets had decided to conquer Western Berlin, that's exactly what would have happened. And there wasn't anyone in the chain of command to say, no, just let's implement page 2, but not page 3 of the plan or anything like that. You know, it's all just kind of automatic at that point.
You know, reading Daniel Ellsberg's books, I mean, just when it's nonfiction, he's talking about, you know, the egghead high national security situation he was in. If your listeners don't know, you know, he was an assistant to McNamara in Vietnam and nuclear policy, and he's just a fantastic guy. But reading his books, you know, you don't need science fiction, do you? Yep. When you read what Ellsberg was talking about at these meetings, what they're actually thinking about.
Yep. Yeah, he says when he and his buddy from the Rand Corporation went and saw Dr. Strangelove, that they walked out of there saying, man, that's not a satire, that's a documentary. This is, yeah, you know, really how we do business. What are we doing?
No, it's true. And then he, you know, he knew Kissinger. And then when Kissinger got promoted to national security, director, what, national security director, Ellsberg went to him and said, you're going to get more stupid because there's all these classifications. So let's say we have a team of 10 people. Well, I've got the lowest classification, so I don't know what you know. And you have a little more classification, so you know more than I know, but you don't know as much as the other person up the line. And then Henry Kissinger's on the top of the totem pole. And so he's listening to his team of 30 people, but he has a higher classification, so he has information they don't. And then he says, you just become stupid in this highly classified, secretive machine.
That's exactly it, and have no regard whatsoever for anybody with open source information, because what could they possibly know since they don't have access to the secrets? Even though a lot of times the real context that matters is, much broader and not secret. But those kind of voices get completely ignored by essentially this cult of, GS employment, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned today's present leadership, and I don't want to talk politically because I don't care Trump, Obama, Bush, Republican, left, right. That's not my game. I'm out in the Pacific here just counting who's doing what. And oh my God, Trump is a peacenik compared to Obama, who's bombing nine countries at one point. The pivot to Asia is a Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton thing. The declaring the South China Sea as a place that America would fight, that was from the mouth of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, she wrote
So,
that big article in Foreign Policy announcing the whole thing.
people, Trump and there's going to be war, and I mean, I heard from friends, we're going to go to war with Korea in the beginning of the administration, and then there's war here and there's war here, and what are you talking about? This is all mythical, this idea that Donald Trump is going to go to war. Where is it? Whereas with Obama, there was a lot of war and a lot of droning, and the movement, the reason we're even talking about conflict with China, that came out of the Obama administration with Secretary of State Clinton.
Although in the aftermath of the virus and all of that, it looks like things are getting pretty ugly. Trump was talking the other day about just cutting off all trade with China altogether.
Talking. No, I got the talk. Can I talk about talking?
Yeah,
Here in
sure.
Australia, they're rabidly anti-Chinese right now, and I mean some of the commentary is almost comical. But anti-Chinese. And well, then the Australian media exploded because the Chinese said, Australia, you're mouthing off so much, we don't want to buy your wine. And I think it was wine and beef, some types of wine and some types of beef. And oh my God, the newspapers are full of this. Well, a friend of mine said, look at iron ore. So what he says, the game between China and Australia is all about iron ore. You can't make steel with iron ore, and Australia has 65% of the world's iron ore. And so at the same moment that the Australian newspapers were saying, oh, they're not going to buy our wine, the Chinese and Australians were negotiating import regulations to become easier for iron ore. We want to buy more. In other words, China is upping the amount of imports that they will take into China. But with the other hand, they're talking. Yeah, so Trump talks and says this about China and whatever. He didn't bomb Beijing. Obama didn't say all those words, and he bombed places. So I'll take Trump's talk. I like it. It's nice and it's peaceful. He was beating up the North Korean leader, and what was it, missile man or something? And but there's no war. He went and met him. It's the Trump way. I don't understand it, but I'm out in the Pacific, and I don't see Trump, warmongering out here.
Well, yeah, like you say, if he wants to talk tough, who cares as long as he's doing the right thing? As we saw on North Korea, he's made more progress than any president since the end of the Cold War. Well, I don't know. Clinton had that pretty good agreed framework deal in 94, but never did live up
And
to
I
it. And
really don't, and I don't mean to get political for Trump or against Trump.
yeah,
I'm
no, I hear
just,
you. It's just a matter of policy. No partisanship on this show anyway, so it's fine.
but people really do ignore the 8 years of Obama and the amount of war making that went on there. And Trump is building up the military, but we haven't broken out into war. So he's a peacenik compared to the last two presidents.
That's true. I mean, Bush and Obama, conservatively speaking, probably killed about 1 million people each. And Trump, at most, is in, probably 500,000. He certainly helped to wage a genocidal war in Yemen, has been the very worst bit of it. He escalated the war in
Started
Afghanistan.
under the Obama, again, no defense of Trump, but
Yeah.
that was the machinery was in place with Obama.
True.
Obama started that
Yeah,
Yemen
no, he
war.
inherited all of those wars, and he's actually doing everything he can to wrap up the one in Afghanistan. We'll see whether it
Obama
really
destroyed
works or not,
the,
but.
sorry. And again, I don't want to Obama versus Trump, but right now, tough talk against China. Well, gee, there's an election. Gee, the American people. See, and I document this in my book about World War II. The American people, we came from Europe generally, especially at that time. And wow, the American people were debating, Northern Italy versus this place in France, and should we move troops here? And but in terms of Asia, they were just ready. It was like 90% ready to go to war with Japan. Lindbergh was saying, no, we shouldn't fight Germany, America first, and let's stay peaceful. But Japan was just bombed the whatever out of them. And right now, it isn't Trump beating up China, it's Trump looking at the polls. 80 to 90% of Americans are upset with China, anti-China. Well, guess what? I'm running for president. I'm gonna say some anti-China things. I need to get elected. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in a campaign speech lied, and his eldest son said to him after the speech, "Dad, you lied." And Roosevelt said, "The job of the president, I got to get elected first. That's the only thing that matters."
Yep. Well, of course, they rationalize everything that they do and say like that. And
But
always, you know.
my point is, Trump, why is Trump going to say something in the next few months? It's to get elected.
Well, same
And I
thing with
don't know
Biden
the
also is
answer.
hawking it up against China and claiming that yeah, it's Trump who's the one who's rolling over for them all the time, et cetera.
But I mean, and then I could sound cynical when I say that. People might think that's cynical. No, this is the system we set up. This guy's got to get elected, And they look at what the American people want. And if the American people are all of a sudden polling 90% for red hats, or I don't mean to say that because that's a Trump hat, but if they're polling for, surfboards, Trump is going to be talking about surfboards. And the American public are polling anti-China once again. You know what? All this trade stuff about how China ripped us off. Why don't we do this? I'm in New Zealand. I'll fly to America. Let's go into an American home, and there'll be a big screen TV. Now we'll do some deep research. We'll look at that TV, and oh my God, that's made in China. Okay, we're getting close here. Now we'll look at the receipt. Where'd that come from? We got to get them. It came from Walmart. You know what I mean? If we have a problem with trade with China, let's talk to Walmart, which was the front for Chinese goods. That's how Walmart grew. That television is in that American consumer's house because it's an excellent value, because it's high quality, and kept American inflation down. So it's a bigger story than this simple black and white, China's bad. But if you keep it black and white, China's bad, 80 to 90% of Americans, Democrats, Republicans, left, right, are polling with you.
Yep. Well, I wonder if they'll regret it for one, half of a fraction of an instant as they're being vaporized by a hydrogen infusion one day, not too soon over it. But hey, as long as it makes them feel better for now, I guess that's all right.
Well, I don't know. That's above my intelligence level, the hydrogen fuse. You're going to have to take us through that one, Scott. I'll
Yeah,
just
well, the
watch
nukes, they burn real hot. I mean, that's really all you need to know.
that one. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of rhetoric and there's a lot of tension, but I don't, the guys I'm interviewing on, I have a podcast channel called Untold Pacific, and I have a section called War with China question mark. And I'm bringing experts on who really do know, deep knowledge. And they all say there's, the leadership has no intention on either side, but there's a potential for accidents, is kind of the bottom line.
Right.
So all the anti-American stuff in China and all the anti-Chinese stuff in America, these political leaders have to maintain their power. And I'm saying it's welling up from the people. I don't look at Trump and what he's saying about China. I look at the American people saying 80, 90% were mad with China. And then
Yeah.
it comes out, of course, out of Biden's and Trump's mouth.
Yep.
They've
And that
got to
doesn't
get elected.
necessarily translate into any specific policies against them. I mean, that much is up to the government to exploit that sentiment. But it is always regretful when the people are even worse than the politicians on their feelings toward foreign countries. That's the last thing we need in the world.
Well, I wrote a whole book about this. When Mao said, the Christian leader Chiang Kai-shek, you get out of here, and Chiang Kai-shek was flushed out to Taiwan, we just this was unspeakable. I mean, we just couldn't face it. And we stopped relations with the biggest country in the world. See, everybody says Nixon opened up China. No, I document in my book. Mao was writing to Franklin Roosevelt, "Hey, you've got the capital, we've got the workers, and we need to work together, to have this globalization, industrialization." Mao didn't like Moscow. He wanted Wall Street.
Right.
So the globalization, the industrialization that's taken place in the last 20 years, Mao was writing to FDR about that. Mao wanted to come to the White House to explain the benefits of American Chinese friendship. America slapped his hand away. He tried with Truman. He tried with Eisenhower. He tried with Kennedy. He tried,
And
So
then he tried
finally.
communism, and it was a disaster. It's too bad they didn't take him up on his offer in the first place.
But I'm talking about relations between. I'm talking about Nixon opening up China.
Yeah, I hear
That's
you.
not. Mao had his hand out all that time. Nixon was the one who finally shook his hand.
Yep. All right, well, listen, I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to read this book, but I'm gonna get my hands on it and and maybe this will be my first step on catching up on the, China part of the American imperial story as it's being written now.
Well,
So,
Scott,
really appreciate
thank
your time,
you.
James.
Yeah, and I appreciate it if you'd read my book, The China Mirage. But I also want to say, take a look at the documentary that's online. It's called The Coming War with China by John Pilger,
Okay.
brilliant guy. And then take a look at the writings of Michael Clare, Klare.
Oh,
He
yeah, we
did a
know Michael
war.
Clare well.
So war with China is already happening. In there, he talks about the motivations of
Great.
both sides, and it's brilliant.
Great. Yeah, I had that queued up to watch, but then I saw it was 2 hours and I just didn't have the chance to get to it today. But I definitely will watch that. And I'm sorry, it's John Pilger is the director, and then what was it called again?
The Coming War with
The
China.
Coming War with China. Okay, great. All right, you guys. So that is James Bradley. He is the author of The China Mirage and, of course, Flags of Our Fathers and Imperial Cruise. And you can find his own website at untoldpacific.com as well. Thanks again.
Okay, Scott, thank you for having me.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.